Chapter 4. A Statement by Vincent Gilmore, the Fairley family solicitor.
I have been asked by my friend, Mr. Walter Hartwright, to explain what happened at Limeridge House after Mr. Hartwright left. In this statement, I will now describe things that took place that seriously affected Miss Fairley. I arrived at Limeridge House on Friday the 2nd of November, and Sir Percival Glyde was expected to arrive on Monday the 5th. I had been invited to the house to discuss the financial details of the possible marriage between Sir Percival Glyde and Miss Laura Fairley. When I arrived, the ladies of the house seemed miserable. Miss Halcombe told me about the letter that Miss Fairley had received the previous day. I believed that the person who had written the letter was simply trying to cause trouble with no good reason, so I was not worried. But I thought Sir Percival Glyde should know about it, so I sent him a copy. Mr. Hartwright left Limeridge House on the Saturday morning, and I was allowed to see Mr. Fairley in the afternoon. As always, he talked mainly about himself and his illnesses, and he did not seem at all interested in discussing the marriage. After asking him about it several times, he finally said that it had been what Laura's late father had wanted. Mr. Fairley said he agreed with the marriage and wanted it to happen so that he did not have to think about it, or Miss Fairley, any longer. On Monday, Sir Percival Glyde arrived. He looked older than I had expected. There was very little hair on his head, and his face seemed tired and lined. But he was polite and friendly and seemed happy to talk openly. He quickly mentioned the mysterious letter, and he told us that Mrs. Catherick had worked for him for several years in the past. She had then married and moved to a different part of Hampshire, but her husband then left her and disappeared. She had been very unlucky, he told us, because her only child had also been born with mental health problems. Sir Percival Glyde said that he had kept in contact with her and had tried to help. When it became clear that Anne needed much more care than Mrs. Catherick could give her, Sir Percival Glyde had offered to pay for Anne to be safely looked after in a private asylum. Due to her mental illness, Anne was not able to understand the reasons why she was there. As a result, when she found out that it was the baronet who was paying for the asylum, she hated him for it. The explanation seemed clear to me, and I believed him. He also strongly encouraged us to write to Anne's mother to ask her about it. Miss Halcombe still had some doubts, so she wrote the letter, and it was sent to Mrs. Catherick that afternoon. We had dinner all together that evening. The conversation was lively, but I did notice that Miss Fairley was very quiet. Sir Percival Glyde spoke to her several times, but she said very little. On Wednesday, Miss Halcombe received a reply from Mrs. Catherick. The letter was short and direct, and echoed closely what Sir Percival Glyde had said, so that was good news. On Thursday morning, I had a meeting with Miss Fairley. I wanted to agree the details of the marriage before I returned to London. When I entered the drawing room, the poor girl looked pale and sad. I carefully explained to her exactly what she would inherit. Firstly, she would receive £20,000 when she became 21 years of age. Secondly, there would be another £10,000 that she would have in her lifetime only. Finally, when her uncle died, she would inherit Limeridge House and all its land, as well as £3,000 a year. Then, if Laura herself died, the amount of £10,000 would pass to her Aunt Eleanor. Aunt Eleanor had been single for many years, but then she married an Italian gentleman called Count Fosco. Laura's father really did not approve of the marriage and so refused to speak to Eleanor, who was also a difficult and selfish woman. He decided to leave her a smaller amount of £10,000, but only if his daughter died first. But because Eleanor was much older than Laura, she was very unlikely to inherit the money at all. And then there was Limeridge House. If Miss Fairley did not marry and there was no son, then the house and land would return to the Fairley family and be inherited by a distant female cousin. If Laura married Sir Percival Glyde, however, then the house and all the land would pass to Sir Percival Glyde if she died. If they had a son, then when Sir Percival Glyde died, their son would then inherit Limeridge House. The £20,000, on the other hand, belonged to Miss Fairley and only Miss Fairley. She could choose exactly who she wanted to inherit that money after her death. So I asked her what should happen to that £20,000 if she died.
"I would like Marion to have some of it. She has been both a mother and a sister to me,"
she replied thoughtfully.
"But I would also like some of it to go to someone else."
Then she stopped. Her cheeks became red and she moved nervously in her chair. She seemed unable to go on and began to cry.
"Don't worry," I said quietly. "We can talk about this another time." I felt there was certainly something going on that I did not know about, a reason for her sadness, but I was not sure what it was.
8 days after my return to London, I received a letter from Miss Halcombe. It announced that Miss Fairley had agreed to marry Sir Percival Glyde in December, 3 months before Miss Fairley's 21st birthday. I prepared the official papers for the marriage. In them, I wrote that if Lady Glyde died before her husband and without leaving children, then the £20,000 would be inherited by Lady Glyde's half-sister, Miss Halcombe, and any other relatives or friends that Lady Glyde had chosen. If, on the other hand, Lady Glyde died and left children, then the money would go directly to them. This plan was a fair one, I strongly believed. I sent the official papers to Sir Percival Glyde's solicitor for them to check, and I waited for their reply. 2 days later, the reply came. The lawyer was happy with all of the contents, apart from the paragraph about the £20,000. On that part of the document, the solicitor had written in red ink, "No, the full £20,000 should go immediately to Sir Percival Glyde if he lives longer than Lady Glyde and there are no children." The baronet wanted the whole amount, if they had no children, to go straight into his own pocket. He did not want a penny of the £20,000 to go to Miss Halcombe or to any other relative or friend of Lady Glyde's. I had spent some time looking into Sir Percival Glyde's financial situation, and I could certainly see why he wanted to change this part of the agreement. Yes, he was a baronet who owned a large house and some land, but he also had enormous debts. I was shocked by this demand, and I immediately wrote a reply saying that this part of the document must remain as it was. Soon another note came, which still refused to accept the agreement without that change. And so I had to discuss this matter with Mr. Fairley. As I suspected, he was not at all interested and told me to just accept the changes that were being asked for. I tried several times to persuade him to change his mind, but he refused. I was angry and upset, but what could I do? Miss Fairley was not yet 21 years of age, and so the decision was Mr. Fairley's. And if I did not prepare these official papers, I felt sure that another lawyer would be employed to do so instead of me. With a heavy heart, I changed the agreement and sent it to Sir Percival Glyde's solicitor the next day. Signed, Vincent Gilmore.